Books on Tape presents Loaded Dice by James Swain. Read by Paul Bamer. The biggest and first crap game is mentioned in Greek mythology. Zeus, Poseidon, and Hades rolled dice for shares of the universe. Poseidon won the oceans. Hades won the underworld. Zeus won the heavens, and is suspected of having used loaded dice. Mario Puzo, Inside Las Vegas. Preface. He had left Arlington Heights early that morning, knowing there would be traffic, and had not been disappointed. The long line of cars on I-395 headed toward Washington had stopped moving, and he hit his brakes. Then he glanced nervously at the cell phone lying on the passenger seat beside him. He'd left the radio turned off so he would not miss the call when it came. Traffic started to move, and he lightly tapped the accelerator. Normally, he liked to listen to the area's local shock jocks rant and rave. Even when he didn't understand what they were talking about, he still fed off their anger. He saw the sign for his exit and merged into the left lane. Putting his indicator on, he kept left at the fork in the ramp, then took a right onto C Street. A Texaco station sat on the corner. Inside, he bought a 16-ounce cup of coffee, paying for it with the change in his pocket. He saw the manager stare. "Where did you get that, buddy?" the manager asked. He stared at the handful of coins in his palm. With the quarters and dimes was a casino chip. It was brown, what gamblers called a chocolate chip.
"Gambling," he replied.
"No kidding." The manager leaned over the counter. "I've seen purples and yellows, but never won that color before. How much is it worth?" He started to tell him that it was worth $5,000. Only he didn't. He was dressed in crummy street clothes and didn't look like someone who'd won that much money.
"Nothing," he said. "It was a souvenir."
"Pretty neat," the manager said. He sat in his van and sipped the coffee until it turned cold. Finally, the cell phone on the seat beside him rang.
"Yes?" he answered.
It was Ziad.
"It's time," his cousin said.
The line went dead. He took the chocolate chip from his pocket. Staring at it, he thought of all that had happened, and all that was about to happen. Then he thought of his parents and family back in Pakistan. What would they think of him? He could only hope they would be proud of what he was about to do. He left the gas station and drove onto First Street. At a traffic light, he stopped and realized his hands were trembling. He unzipped his windbreaker and stared at the three hand grenades strapped around his waist. The light turned green. Closing his jacket, he took a right on Independence, heading the van toward Pennsylvania Avenue and the White House. 2.5 years later. Chapter 1. The most desirable women in Las Vegas didn't live there. They lived in Southern California and worked as dental hygienists, aerobic instructors, and nurses. They lived regular 9-to-5 lives. Then, on the weekend, they flew to Las Vegas, usually on Southwest because it had the most flights, got off the plane, and became different people. Their names changed, and so did their hairstyles and their clothes. It was as if a magic wand had been waved over them, although the change was anything but magical. They became strippers in the gentlemen's clubs that hung on the periphery of the Las Vegas Strip. They paid the club owners $200 a night and made the money back in 20 minutes from drunken men wanting a friction dance. On a good night, they took home $1,000. It wasn't that these women were more beautiful than the women who lived in Las Vegas. Vegas was filled with knockouts. What made them different was that they weren't used to being treated like garbage, which was how most women in Las Vegas got treated.
No. These women still had dreams. They lived in la-la land, and it came through on their faces every time they smiled. Her name was Chris, and she danced at the Pink Pony. Lieutenant Pete Longo of the Metro Las Vegas Police Department had met Chris while responding to a call about a fight. Normally, he would have let a uniform deal with it. Only the prospect of seeing naked women dancing against a backdrop of sporting events projected on a colossal screen had propelled him into action. That, and not having to see his wife for another hour. The fight was between a drunk and a bouncer, and it was over Chris. The drunk was a big, corn-fed kid from the Midwest who'd trapped Chris in a VIP booth. She was naked, save a G-string, and looked scared out of her wits. Petite, blonde hair, great figure, and her own breasts. Not the prettiest woman he'd ever seen, but damn close. Longo had acknowledged her with a thin smile. Then he'd tried to arrest the drunk. The drunk had responded by spitting on him. Longo was pretty fat. His mother called him chubby, but that was his mother. Beneath the flab was some real muscle. In the gym, he could bench press his weight. Most guys his size couldn't do that, and he knew how to fight. He knocked the drunk out with two punches. It had impressed the hell out of the bouncer, an African-American kid whose Italian suit had gotten torn in the scuffle, and it had impressed the gaggle of patrons and strippers standing nearby. But who had impressed the most was Chris.
Oh!
She'd squealed as the Midwest mauler fell. Longo made the bouncer sit on him. Then he'd taken off his jacket and draped it over Chris's shoulders. You okay? He asked. She closed the jacket around her and nodded her head. Did he hurt you? She shook her head.
That was really cool, she said.
What's your name?
Star,
she said. Your real name. That had gotten her. The hint of a smile crossed her lips.
Chris.
You're not from around here, are you? He said. That had been 6 weeks ago. Pulling into the driveway of Chris's townhouse in his brand new Ford Explorer, Longo felt himself shaking his head. It felt like they'd known each other 6 years. Every time they'd gotten together, every single encounter had been the stuff dreams were made of. Beeping his horn, he looked expectantly at the front door. A minute passed. He rolled down his window and sucked in the brisk desert air. It was early April, his favorite time of year. Warm days, cool nights, perfect sleeping weather. He tapped his horn again. When she didn't come out, he slipped out of the SUV. The garage door was open, his old Mustang convertible sitting in the space. He'd given it to Chris so she'd have wheels on the weekends. He'd concocted an elaborate story for his wife, only she'd never asked him what he'd done with the car. Too happy with the new Ford Explorer, he guessed. Cindy was funny that way. Since their marriage had gone on the rocks, she had stopped questioning where the money was coming from. They went on nice vacations twice a year, drove new cars, and had money in the bank. All on his crummy detective's salary. The front door was locked, and he trudged around back. Taking the spare key out of the flower pot, he unlocked the back door. He waited expectantly for the alarm's piercing whine. When it didn't sound, he went in.
Hey, Chris, it's me. They stopped serving breakfast at 9. We need to hurry.
Still no answer. Probably in the bathroom doing her hair. Chris looked like a cheerleader when she wasn't stripping. She was a stickler about keeping the place clean, and he slipped off his shoes and padded silently into the living room. Right away he knew something was wrong. The air smelled funny, and he spied a half-smoked cigarette lying on the glass coffee table. Chris had flown in the night before and called him from the club. Said she was going to dance until 3 a.m., then go to the townhouse. He was to pick her up at 8:30 for breakfast. A simple plan, although he now realized that someone had come home with her. Lifting his eyes, he stared at the hallway that led...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?